Chair, that is the presentation from the Department. In conclusion, we would like to say that we remain functional as a department, and we restored our clean audit because we are a governance champion. We have introduced measures to monitor performance and enhance individual productive performance within the department. And as the EDG corporate management indicated, that all our senior management staff, they have contracts signed with clear targets, and we have achieved 83% effort by the AG, the threshold is 80. And this, we've also introduced engagement with senior management team on a quarterly basis, where we go through our performance as a collective, areas that require improvement, and how we move forward. The retention of skilled staff within the public service administration, as again my colleague indicated, remains a challenge, but again we're trying to develop innovative measures through our talent management tools. That is it, Chair, and so we can engage the committee in the presentation.
Thank you, everybody. We have received documents that now they are submitted to us, the few changes that they have within them. We are now going to engage the department as the members. I am waiting for your hand to engage with the department in the presentation that we have just made.
And if you don't have questions,
some of these mistakes using the tools, the dashboard tool and the internal auditors. If you have six sign entities, by implication, it means you have seven boards. And we keep on asking ourselves, why would we have problems and continue to have contractors if we have a lot of people, including executives, who can assist to deal with some of these things? Because my take is, some of these board members are appointed on the basis of this particular skill, and who are supposed to be assisting in such of things in the criteria where you are utilizing consultants. Secondly, is the contribution of the department and entities with regard to government targets or job creation. If you can also share with us, because these department and entities are supposed to be to take a very take a center stage in the area of job creation. If you can share with the committee how much percentage are we contributing to the overall government target in relation to job creation. But there is also an issue around the over a million, what do you call it, fruitful expenditure on the cancellation of the BRICS summit. I'm not convinced that there are people who are supposed to take responsibility in that regard. But from the presentation, seemingly, I'm not getting reasons why certain people cannot take responsibility in regard. What happened in fact, which resulted in us canceling that summit, and Steve was saying to the colleagues, no one could be held responsible for over a million food letter spinach with regard to cancellation of the summit. But there is also an issue in relation to the challenge on talent management. The DG, the thing about somewhere in October, I think the 7th of October, when he came to make a presentation to engage with the portfolio committee, he was saying something is being done to ensure that he deal with this particular issue. And he was saying he has even signed agreements with the executives to make sure that they don't leave the department within a particular period that the agreement has indicated. A dear man, we told the very few years left, who are saying I have entered into an agreement for people not to leave. Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. So my take is this strategy that you're saying you are coming up with now, how effective is this going to be? If you say they are now coming up with a strategy to make sure that people don't leave the department to deal with the area of schools. I don't know if next week will be told the SEBT has left as well. But last we said is with regard to the target versus the achievement. I was looking at some of your targets, and in my take, some of your targets are very vague and not measurable in my own understanding. If you talk about a target which says financial management sustainability, to me it's a very big target. And I was looking at that column which talks about achievement, we are talking about figures. I thought those figures will be there as targets, so that we are able to say of what you said you will achieve, how much was achieved and how far did you move in that respect. Something is an issue that we might want to look at going forward. That at least we need targets, just as this was called committee, targets which are not there, but which are measurable. So that even at the level of the portfolio committee, including the shareholders, we're able to help people, hold people accountable give those targets another chance. We don't want eight targets, one target which are available. Thank you.
One of the mandates of the department to unlock the economic growth, which is a very metal challenge, it's quite interesting to me. What I really want to understand in terms of the report that has been presented here, to be much more specific, when we talk about this, like the broader statement, economic growth, can we be able to get the sense of how many people were, or people, let me put it that way, in terms of economic growth, have been helped to be financially sustainable or to be serious people who are contributing to the economy, so that we're able to compare with the very same mandate of the economic growth. But as things stand, it looks like, as I thought that we'll get the sense of the presentations goes on. But I'm not sure if, can you quantify the economic growth by actually pointing directly at whom we've been able to develop thus far? Maybe to say that at least out of so many programs that has actually happened, these are 10 black people that have been able to be empowered economically, and this is what they're actually doing. Yeah, that's the first question. The other one is around target around the youth empowerment program. Also, I don't actually get a sense. It is also the youth empowerment program. I was listening to the SMBDGs that they went and injected the communities and all of that to identify the needs. Now, I'm just trying to understand if the Department of Public Enterprise, which comes to say that we want to develop, I assume, young people, so you should be having a program that says, this is how we want to develop you, so that we can say that you have contributed into the empowerment of young people. But as it stands, it just says that you have interacted, as according to explanation, you have interacted with the communities and we have just identified the needs. Can you just be taken into town? What are the actual practical programs of youth empowerment? So I agree with Honorable Fedi around the fruitless expenditure, particularly this one that it can be explained. 580,000 men. If my basic understanding is something that has been helpful, it means that you must benefit, because that thing does not happen. But in this case, for canceling something, we are now enjoying a fruitless expenditure. So it's my little narrow understanding of the statement. If you can just elaborate more, so that at least we get a more sense of what has actually happened. In terms of SASCO, when do we think the situation will be improved around the mandate? The understanding is that the SASCO, the situation around the strategic roles, it looks like there's going to be some changes in the manner in which they've been operating. How long is it going to take? And the last point, it is around the economic downturn, which has been 4 to 3 years, 3 to 4 years back, not 6 years back. It keeps on coming in each and every presentation, anywhere where you go, you find that we are told about economic downturn which affect us maybe negatively. If I may just ask, surely some of people might be maybe economists in here. When we think that we will stabilize from this economic downturn so that we can really focus on really growing the economy of the country using the very same department. Thanks.
And give you enough time to express yourself because I don't usually do second round. She thinks I'm very happy to hear that I was getting a little worried there for a second. I can't even look at my party. All morning we've been laughing together. Thank you. I'm slightly confused as to the 711,000 rand of irregular expense that was due to non-compliance. I don't understand why non-compliance would result in that irregular expense. Because it's not explained to us. What department was actually taken against anyone? You know, along with what my colleague said earlier about the BRICS summit we came to, I also want to know if there's going to be some form of action taken here. And you see, the thing is, I think we fall into the trap of saying, well, it's 711,000, it's not that much, but actually it is a lot. And over time, the amount adds up to huge amounts. I think we need to, you know, to nip these little things when they start. Then, Sham, I'm really interested to hear about the FIAP and that the 10 airlines that were already in the first 10 airlines of the aerospace. Now, is this are these the Airbus or the Boeing? Because we still actually don't have clarity as to which contract we went with the air. And we were also paying off, when I say we understand, I think about we're paying fines of, we're paying $20 million a month due to breach of contracts with Airbus, for example. So where do we stand on that, just so we know how that looks going forward? And then, Chair, I suppose it's the age-old story when it comes to the retention of staff. What do we do to retain our staff? Because I have a suspicion, and I've thought this for many years of being on the committee, that DPE is used at the university, and then the SOEs can approach from the university. And it's a problem, because then we end up with shortfalls, and the shortfalls are not DPE. DPE literally cannot train up enough people because as they train someone, an FAE coaches them away. So somewhere, somehow, there's got to be agreement between FAEs and DPE that we speak to each other before all we do is train up and coach and train up and coach. Because while we want to train people, we also want to, we need the retention because it's creating very big problems in EPE. And then the strategic equity partnerships, I like this. I like it then that this is a big part of it, and it's finally equity. So, Chair, let's ask the age-old question. Does this mean we're going to look at semi-privatizing some of our sector entities? And if so, which one?
The person. Mine is with regard to the retention strategy of the department. Just to say, one appreciates the fact that something has been said with regard to retention, but the methodology that is being used needs to be elaborated on so that we can fully understand in order to avoid that we don't allow this department to be the city of other institutions, including the source system. Then secondly, Chair, I would want to get some information with regards to cases of litigation in the department. Are there any cases where the department was actually found on the other side of the law and subjected to any kind of litigation? Or the other way around, is there any instance where the department has actually taking someone to court for doing something that is contrary to what was expected and subsequently the department was litigated for the institution now being the sub-partner in the department becomes beneficial. Lastly, Sam, of course, I know you believe in things being done qualitatively in France. I won't come there. Just to ask. I'm sure Ronald McCall is sharing the same sentiment with you. So the last one here is with regard to the equity, the equity plans of the department. There was no information that was given pertaining to the implementation of the equity in the department. Thank you.
My question relates to the latest of the SAA and SA Express annual reports. I think last year the reports relates to, I'm pretty sure, the year before. What is the department doing as a shareholder to ensure that these reports aren't submitted to the State Department?
Thank you, Honourable Members. I've got two questions to answer you, to you, or I can answer them.
Yeah, I've got answers for the
other,
but I leave it to you,
the effect. I've got two questions. In your presentation, you gave us your vision as the department. My question is, the vision and the mission, I know it's a long-term vision and a long-term mission, but I want to check, are you achieving some of those the things that you want to achieve in your mission? Is there anything that you can, I mean, ever since this department has been established, have you achieved one thing maybe in your damage? One small thing that you said is part of the mission, part of the vision that we have as a department. Also, in the same on the same mission and vision in the key outcomes that you have, the SOC majority of the research here, that your one of your key outcomes is to stabilize and repositioning of SOCs, looking at the funding options. The SOCs established because they must develop the socio-economic of the country and create jobs. Instead, what we are seeing in some of the SOCs, in the majority of the SOCs, there is instability, especially in the financial controls or financial management positions. What is the department's intake on those things? You visited with the minister, they say the CEO of SOC, that the minister, the deputy minister, has visited through seven provinces. I am not sure if I was maybe not listening. What was the reason for this visit? Have you achieved anything in your visit? Have you seen some discrepancies within those departments or those SOCs that you visited? What did you get out of that visit? The other thing is on your key challenge experience in 2013 and 2014. You said that on page, on slide number 14, the slower than expected economy performance resulting to lower volume of land, some of the targets by SOC such as transfer could not be achieved. Could you elaborate a little bit on this? In the delay of same post, you need special skills. South Africa has got graduates that are unemployed. May I invite me? I think you've got the length of the number of graduates that we have in South Africa is how many do we have? Do you think for this special skills that we need in the department, are those graduates untrainable for them to have those skills, then resourcing those skills outside? Because if you resource them from Zimbabwe, the Zimbabweans will come and work, and sometimes they'll have to go back to Zimbabwe and leave South Africa without the skills. Can't you put them in the training, maybe take that test, the skills that one, and then take that person who has got that skill to educate the South African graduates that are unemployed so as to be employable in to put them in your employment strategy that you have. Because recently we visited Image of the power station. The gentleman who was walking us around the power station, he said there are kids that they take from outside, and those people are coming, they will be next to the person doing that job, and they will look at it. But for me, that is not enough. You look at a person, you don't have skill of writing, and then you look at that person as he or she is writing, and you think you can take that skill out. For me, it's not possible. I'm a teacher by profession. For me, that is not possible. You need to be trained on how to read and write. I also had a concern with the irregular expenditure and the fruitless expenditure. The fruitless expenditure that resulted, that is of the result of the cancellation of Oxford Summit. The reason for the cancellation of the summit, I want the reason for the cancellation, because it might be due to the fact that the SOCs have no report or a program that they can present in front of the preparing as the other SOCs that cannot give us the annual report because of not having enough programs for them to be able to make us a proper report. Also, the issue of Ilendo is the corporate tax issue. Have you identified the places that are nice in copper test? I'm asking this because if you identify the places, you'll be able to me, I think, with your skills, with your intelligence and your intellectual capacity that you have, you will be able to know what to do to help maybe those communities. Maybe they are stealing the copper because they want to sell it and have an income. Maybe you'll be able to have something, a program that you can do in that area so that community or those people can stop being a problem in stealing these things. In my third or fourth question, when I asked about the skills, you said last time you've got a good relationship with the Department of Higher Education, if my memory serves me well. Does that mean you have maybe some people that you have set aside, taken from the Department of Higher Education, some students that you can develop, and many students that you have already developed, so as to maintain the employment of those students? I think that would be... Oh, also yesterday with the Auditor General, when the Auditor General was giving us the report, the audit report, they spoke about the way the SOCs are working. And we raised the question of food and health being an SOC that is very good in their finances and effort management and everything. But food and health is working with this FAA that has got a problem. What is the alignment alignment of work between the NEM and FAA, are you not able to advise the NEM to develop FAA so that the FAA cannot encounter such many problems, but they are working with people who are present? I believe that if you're working as a team, somebody who is failing needs to be pulled up by other people in the team to make the team work together correctly or efficiently. The strategy partnership that you have with our African countries around us, does it have an impact on job creation in South Africa or South African community? And which countries are you targeting? Do you have a targeted time that you say in this targeted time, maybe in 3 years from now, in our strategy, we will make it sure that we have achieved this and this, like for example, skills development, we will have achieved job creation within South Africa, and so as to, and also to maintain the relationship with those countries that you work with. I think that would be my few questions for now. I hope I'm taking the second round.
Thank you, Chair. The beauty also of being in the department and leading a diverse group of state-owned companies is you don't have to answer all the questions by yourself. What I would do with your permission, Chair, I would like the DDG corporate management to talk to the issues that relate to skills development, talent management, issues of foodless expenditure around the BRICS, and the issues of details around the disciplinary methods. And then also I would like her to address this issue of provincial engagement and share the details a little bit, because the idea was that we're looking at the time, we could have put so much in the presentation, but I would like her to talk to what we've been doing with the youth, what are we giving them, the salient features of this work. Then I would then refer to the DDG manufacturing to talk around Safcon in terms of when, what do you think, when will the situation improve with regard to the company, and maybe share a little bit of details with the committee members what we are doing there. The DDG transport to talk to the issues around Transnet missed targets, issues relating to the details on the aircraft that are being purchased, and then I would come in and the key challenges on the Transnet as well, if you can talk to that. And Chair, I would then come back and talk to the broader issues around the vision, the economic climate, but also issues of unemployment. I would like our colleague Dina to talk to that, and then I'll come back on this other issue, and then the question, other areas as well that you think you can cover that I've missed. Thank you.
Thank you,
DJ.
On the process expenditure, this is the amount of 130,000, and this basically what happened was that part of the risk commitment that we made by South Africa, I think it was in the previous financial year, it was in 2013 financial year when we hosted the BRICS summit, was cooperation amongst the SOCs within the BRICS countries. So there was a session of DGs or head of departments that took place in preparation for the ministerial session. So what got cancelled at the last minute is the ministerial session, because I think 2 days before the event, we discovered that most of the ministers were unable to attend. This is despite the fact that we relied on the Department of International Relations to DECO to do the invitations and follow-ups on our behalf. But it was quite clear, I think 2 or 3 days before the event, that the targeted audience or participants, which was the ministers responsible for state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies from other countries, were really unable to attend because of a number of reasons. I remember, I think there was elections in one of the countries, in India or something, they were preparing for elections. There were all kinds of reasons that were given. And unfortunately, we had to cancel because it was a ministerial engagement, and the cancellation resulted in a fruitless expenditure of around 500. I think it was 527,000 rents that was fruitless expenditure there. We did an investigation as a department and were satisfied with the information and the evidence that was provided by colleagues within the department on the efforts that, or the progress that was made in terms of organizing and the engagement and the communication between JECO and our department, that we couldn't have done more. We were ready from our side to host, our SOCs were ready, the reports and everything, agendas were approved, but the people who are supposed to participate in the meeting were not available. I think out of the a number of ministers we expected, only one, which was our minister for South Africa, was really concerned, and we were certain that the minister would be attending. On the irregular expenditure comprises mainly of, it is non-compliant. By its nature, irregular expenditure arises as a result of non-compliance with policies and procedures within the department. One of the key drivers of this irregular expenditure is the salaries that were given to staff in a previous financial year without following process. And it's the final leg of the process. Everything they did properly, but I think where the DG was supposed to sign off the salaries, somebody later signed off the salaries instead of the being signed by the DG. An investigation was undertaken on a particular issue to the extent that the staff member involved, there were other charges related to her. She was dismissed, but she is appealing on the case. And so we view the case as not concluded until we understand the appeal itself. The staff member who was dismissed was an HR director at the time in the department. There's also other non-compliances that relate to adherence to supply chain management processes, like the supply chain management process requires for certain expenditure to have 3 codes. And then you realize that there were only 2 codes, simply because when you advertise, you couldn't get the third code. So people are awarded on the basis of that. However, if that happens, then the process that needs to follow to be followed will include the deviation, or declare upfront in the submission that only 2 codes were received. So it's just that detail already. In terms of our own findings, we have attended to those issues and addressed them. And we will, I think, when we come back to the committee, we'll then would have completed all these cases and close of the matter properly with the committee. There was a question about retaining staff and agreement between the SOCs and the DPE. And the fact that SOCs are actively recruiting, we have recruited our previous DG from DPE. And our methodology for retention is governed by DBSA. We rely on performance bonuses, and frankly, we know in government we don't pay real performance bonuses. If you were to compare, if a person is at a stage in their lives where they want money and want to retain them in the department and say, hey, we pay you a performance bonus, what probably transfer pay is a performance bonus for good performance is what compared to what the department we pay, like a top of the ocean as a department. So the other issue I think is around the salary adjustments. I mean, you know, if people are recognized and perform well, they are given one salary notch in government to move up to the next level, which really doesn't make much a difference if a person has another option or is looking for different levels of reflection of their own lives. The other issue, the other area that gets used also is training and bursaries. So there's a number of things that the public services defined as a tool that you can utilize to look at retention for people. What typically happens, I mean, the cases that we're dealing with currently, if I may share, is that we have advertised for less for positions for a chief director economic modeling and a chief director funding. And we started to get people from the market. And we said, okay, let's enhance. And I got some CVs from HR regarding enhancing that we have to take the business unit concern. Already the asking price, one of the two CVs I saw, one the asking price for the chief director funding is 1.3 million, the other is 1.2 million. And I mean, that's a salary that's paid at ADDG, not a chief director in the Department of Public Enterprises. And there's all other kinds of things that these people say they want, because I don't think they understand government, but also they ask who they offer in the private sector space. So for those kinds of positions, even if you get a graduate from university, it's going to take you probably 5 years or so to train them to be specialist in economic modeling or to be specialist in project financing. It's not something, the turnaround time is quite very slow. On some of the special skills that we're looking for. But having said that, we have an internship program in the department. We have a talent pool program in the department where we've recruited young people and they're being incubated in different roles and supported to provide support to the department. But already it brings a lot of pride from my colleagues, because once these young people are ready and they know the job and we've trained them, the contracts end and they have to leave because we don't have vacancies for them. Because we might have a vacancy at chief director level, but we're not going to take a young person from school and put in the chief director position because there's management experience and all these other things that are required. I think currently the system with about 20 young people are in our talent pool who are working with the different units within the department. I think on the equity plan, it's on page 91 of the report itself, the details report. We've been declaring our debt in relation to the equity plan. I can say that in terms of disability, we're doing well. In terms of gender balance between women and men, at the DDG level, we're doing well. I think we're one of the top departments, according to information I've read, in terms of we have about, out of 7 DDGs, we have 5 who are females and 2 women. Within the SMS category, which includes director and chief director, we stood around, I think, 45% women. So we're still trying to get the 50% women target, but I believe we're getting there. At the lower levels of the department, we're doing quite well in terms of women. With this report, I think we're at 60% women and 40% men. And on disability and racial balance, we're doing quite well as an organization. Lastly, on the provincial engagement, I think what I wanted, the program of the provincial engagement is a program that was developed by the minister and the deputy minister in order to ensure that the department engages with communities as well as with the provincial government departments and businesses. So typically in a provincial engagement, minister and the minister and the agencies would meet with the provincial government, the relevant agencies and the FEMIA, the provincial government. We present our services to them. They present to us what they wish. They might be wanting a piece of land owned by Transnet somewhere, or they might be wanting an upgrade of the rail system or something that belongs to one of the SOCs. So there's tasks that are set up between the province and our SOCs and the department to work on improving those things and to ensure that we take those issues back to operation of the SOCs. And if the SOC has agreed that they are going to consider this matter as an issue that requires attention. Then the afternoon part is spent with the communities. It might be when they go to a school and open a telematics project, which is what we've been doing as part of the CSI program. There is a telematics project basically aimed at bringing your science and math to the most rural schools through telematics, and we're working on this in partnership with the Department of, with Stellenbosch University. The third element becomes the session that the DPE ministers and the SOC, SSCOs would have with business to engage business and talk about opportunities that exist within that particular community. Lastly, on the youth program, I just have to say that we have a very elaborate youth program, and I think what we will advise the SOCs as they come to present their annual report is that they must also focus on some of the specific areas that have been asked and give further detail to the detail the rest with them. Our youth program consists of career expos. So we visit a number of schools and communities where we do career expos. We partner with existing expos, or we go to a school and do, like the one that EDG was referring to. We had a career expo in Gugulethu, which attracted more than 1,500 learners from schools from the area and the surrounding areas, where we take our resources, explain to them the opportunities, they give them bursary forms so that they can apply for bursary. The e-skills development program of the SOCs, which also look at creating opportunities for young people to train in the SOCs. Members of the core, I think it was last year where there was a partnership between Transnet and the Department of Higher Education on skills, where I think Transnet recruited about 1,000 young people into their facility to train them on the different skills like welding and all the other things that they need to training on as part of developing capacity for the economy. There is bursaries that the students, especially those in the math and science base, can apply for from the SOCs. There is job opportunities that get created for young people. One of the projects we are currently doing, and we'll bring this into the committee, is to document young people who have got into our SOCs and who have graduated through their bursaries and who have now been employed by our SOCs. Some are train drivers, some are pilots, some are in the forestry base. We bring them in our career expo to motivate other young people in our communities, but we felt it's important that we record this thing so that we can also demonstrate some of the work that's being done. But as I indicated earlier on, we will take this information back to the SOCs and advise them in preparing for their annual reports when they present it here. They must also bring some of this information very sharply and the figures that are involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's what I was going to ask you to do now. To give us the community, the part of the province that we have visited, and also the communities you spoke to, the schools that have got this program. So if you say we'll get them from the SOC, it's fine.
We will share and we'll develop the list also for the community from the department point of view.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Just to add to my colleagues, explanation on job creation. Just to say on, and really here I'm just going to touch on the SOCs that I'm responsible for. Aleko, for instance, in Rakhtarsval has last year opened a new plant, Nesplatan, which is a gravel processing plant, which is part of the Ramon recovery process. Through that investment, it's about 50 million pounds, 12 job opportunities. Were created in that community, which is quite significant when you look at the number of people that are in that part of the world. And 60 of those positions, as you speak today, have been filled. And going forward, we're hoping all of them will have been filled. And there are not only communities in the Rakhtarsval that are benefiting also from what Nolo have been included in those job opportunities. And obviously the details of that will be expanded on when Alexa comes here to table the annual report. But with the land mining activities as well, there is a particular effort to involve the community, and also there is a women-owned consortium that is involved in land mining activities in Rakhtarsval, which is really the great development in that part of the world. Lives have really been changed. Concerning that SOC was a few years ago. With regard to SAMCOL deployed during its peak season, its peak harvesting season, 2,000 people on temporary, on top of the 2,000 permanent people that are employed there. And those numbers in that part of the world make a huge difference to the people's lives. And going forward with the new strategy, we're looking at further any activities happening at Upcall with further processing, with the plywood plant that is being spoken about, with the furniture manufacturing plants they are busy working on, and hoping that the Department of Education and Department of Health and Culture will come to the party by taking up or placing other symptoms, but that's which are called, which will make that particular process viable. So we're quite hopeful that even bigger impact will be done by those two initiatives that are in rural areas. Of course, speaking about the denial, most of the jobs that have been created there obviously are high-tech jobs, and now we'll share some of the numbers with yourselves. But at the Aviation and the Training Academy, 250 children have been trained on an annual basis in artisan skills to be aircraft mechanics, in structural workers, to be avionicians. And these are children that have been sourced from rural areas of our country. So that so there's some very good work that has been done at that particular facility. And of course, the Dinelli has been on an upward trajectory. They have started a space technology business in our space tech, which is looking at developing, manufacturing, and launching of satellites for various functional communications and air observation purposes. With regard to the question asked by Honorable Rafaela on top call, though the role that has been formulated by the department has not made its way to cabinet due to the congested agenda at the end of the last at the end of the last administration, there has been quite extensive engagement and sharing of departmental views with the SACO. And this role was developed from studies that had been commissioned jointly by the department and SACO. So we are aligned in terms of expectations with regard to the new role of SACO going forward. So the delay has not really affected the business of SACO. And in the last financial year, the Minister of Public Enterprise structured SACO has developed a strategy that is aligned to that particular role. That will then be public into the department for approval. That process is still happening. There's still some studies that SACO is completing, and in due course we have that particular strategy. And some of the projects that are spoken about are going to be part of that particular project. So I just want to allay the committee's fears as to whether the business has been negatively affected by that delay. It's not. And with the new role that we have defined, so does not depart much from the current role of SACO. What we are looking to do is rather to increase the manufacturing activities with the intention, obviously, ensuring greater impact in the rural areas where SACO is located. Colonel Michaels asked about strategic partnerships, whether this is the dawn of privatization. The department is not saying much, and I will redirect it about principles on that one. That particular study, we are looking backwards. We are looking at the transactions that have been completed in the past, and we are trying to see what we can learn from that. In terms of the financial performance of the entities that were were part of this strategic partnership strategy, there's been a very noticeable improvement. Jobs have been retained, new markets have been opened, new products have been launched, but of course one day to have a holistic or overview, they're looking at issues of IP, whether you know the IP has been retained, that we have not we have been exchanged for IP that has been developed through Department of Defense funding, that we have gotten the full benefit of the country from this particular transaction. And whether in the process we have not lost any capabilities that are critical to obviously supporting the South African national defense. And that was all.
In the case of Transnet and SAA, with regard to the economic downturn, I think we can appreciate that when there is an event of that nature globally, it would take a little bit of a while for economies to come back. So the ripple effects will not necessarily be evident in the first year. In the second year, they could go on for however long, depending on the markets that are affected, and in the case the market from a transit perspective that are affected, or rather let me say they are mostly for, or rather in the commodities that transit is moving. So we see that despite Transnet does try to increase the freight that they're moving from other communities, what the other communities are improving. In terms of the target, I think maybe the way that we have presented the report on the targets is not very clear, but the targets are not are very specific. So if you look at the achievement, I mean, what we have put here is the key performance indicators. So we have key performance indicators in terms of operational efficiency. But we haven't specified what the target is for the year. But in the achievement, we have indicated that Transnet has achieved this much against the target of that much. So maybe in future what we can do is that in the target column, we should put the target. The question on the aircraft, the Airbus Airbus wing, here we're talking in terms of the existing contract around the narrow body aircraft, which is the Airbus A320 aircraft. This contract has been placed for quite a while between SAA and Airbus, and this is the aircraft that SAA is taking delivery on. So far, SAA has already taken delivery of 4 aircraft, and there have not been any penalty paid by SAA because the schedule has been on time. SAA has never been in a situation where they've had to pay penalties because, you know, they were late or anything like that. The only thing is that there was people's interest on repayment of pre-delivery payments. So it's like a deposit for your aircraft. It was only a 2 occasions that it happened, but otherwise, it has always been able to take delivery on time. And this is also according to the schedule that Airbus entered into the airway. And I think
thanks. I'm just going to just make a comment on the economy as well as the impact that our state oil companies have been able to give as boost demand in the economy and also to ensure that we improve the overall competitiveness of the economy. In terms of the job numbers, I think there is great acceptance that our state oil companies are the biggest employers in the economy. And the last time we did the numbers, our companies were employing around about 120,000 people. These are full-time employees, and it executes the contracts with cars that are waiting in the construction site. So that really shows the government commitment towards creating jobs in the economy. Further, I think the National Development Plan, as well as the new group path, outline the structural constraints that will impede the economy from growing faster, as well as addressing the challenges around employment, poverty, as well as inequities. I think the issue of infrastructure investment image as a key strategy for government to drive economic growth and also to ensure that it creates the employment opportunities for our people. And just to look at the past 5 years, Eskom invested a quarter of a trillion, which is around about 250 billion, and Transnet invested around 120 billion rands. And that was a major injection to the economy, and it played a critical part in addressing the crisis and the economic recession and making sure that we put the economy out of economic crisis. I think the action which has indicated the major concern on the government side when you look at the investment strike. The economy needs investment, the government needs money to drive this program, but the major problem is that the private sector is not coming through to support the government. But through the partnership that has been led by the president, I think that commitment is slowly coming through. And we believe that when government and the private sector work together and go beyond ideological differences, we can be able to drive the economy and improve the performance of the economy going forward. I think the major concern is that at the moment, the past two quarters have been not good for the economy. IMF came out last week and revised the growth level for 2014 downwards from just above 2% to 1.4%. And we're going to get an update from the Minister of Finance during the medium-term budget and policy statement on their latest projection for 2014. But I think the SOC on our side have played critical role to make sure that we really affect the recession and the complete erosion of demand in the economy.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll take in the latter remaining set of questions, but maybe let me start off with the United Energy in terms of the economic downturn. I think one of the issues that we also need to appreciate is that the rent exchange rate as well does have an impact on our trading companies. And issues that, and these are issues that we call exogenous factors, strikes in the mining and in the transport sector. The reduction in export markets. Now, also a negative outlook on South Africa as an investment destination, as well as the downgrading of this, the downgrading of the sovereign. These are all the issues that have an impact in terms of how our little companies do business. And so, in terms of our own analysis of DCE of doing our own export, we always look at these issues and say, despite these challenges, we want the state-owned companies to go out there and invest. And I think with the constrained electricity system, it has also affected the private sector. And I think these are all the issues that we're working on. Hence, the ESCOM support package becomes critical to ensure that we also alleviate the challenges for the private sector. I think on the issue raised by Honourable Michael on the strategic equity partnerships and the strategies which SOCs are being targeted, I think our idea in terms of the way that we currently do is that we are looking at cocktail of solutions and structures. And we need to then to develop a coherent policy around strategic equity partnerships. Because again, it will be a miss of us to think that it will be a one-size-fits-all because that's that we have a fragmented portfolio. So we are looking at the historical issues around strategic equity partnership, but also how we align the future in terms of private sector partnerships. The litigation cases, I don't have this on top of my head, but I can give those ones because of them, and without going into details because they are still set up to say. We do have a litigation where Mr. has been cited involving SAA with Comair. So the parties are in the process of exchanging institutions. Then with that transportation funds, we've got various methods. I think it's about three or four different methods. But there has been one that has just been simply adjudicated on. And as a department, we took a decision that we are going to appeal the decision of the court. As no remedy was sought against the minister, but the matter is put in between the transmitted and affected parties. Then on the issue of appointment of key board members, I think this is again a cornerstone in terms of our oversight function, and the committee will call a couple of weeks ago, I think 2 weeks to the exact. Ministers issued an ask calling for board nominations, and the idea again is to constantly revisit the skills of the board members, the tenure, the demographics, and as well as market evolve to ensure that we don't lose out the great board members that can assist our state-owned companies. And Chair, the lateness of the SAA and SAF tabling of the annual report, the department is looking at, again, it's all those economic downturn issues that we're talking about. There's been a huge impact on SAA and SAF. So what did the minister requested us to do, because she was beginning the annual general meeting cycle. She requested that can we go ahead to do a comprehensive work around the successes or achievements or non-achievements to date on the LDTS, and that's the work that we're doing now so that we can be able to advise the minister in terms of what has been the challenge in terms of implementing this. And as the DDG Transport Elite indicated, that we have made a submission to National Treasury, but we don't want to keep it and wait for Treasury, and we're trying to build a number of scenarios for Treasury. The socio-economic mandate, especially for creation and financial estate, I think Prina has just spoken to that. Corporate theft, I think we have identified here what are called the high score areas, and we've developed proposals. But I think here, the challenge with this issue of corporate theft is that it is not a socio-economic community issue. It's a criminal activity. And the proposals that we're putting on the table, one of them includes looking at declaring copper as a precious metal, and because that will allow the copper debt to be dealt with as a serious offense. Currently, it's just a minor offense, and so when you scratch the surface, you don't deal with a real culprit. Sharing of experiences, I think, in addition to what DDG Manufacturing indicated, We are revisiting, because we have not had a session with our chairpersons. We are looking at the chairpersons forum again to forge collaborations with state-owned companies. However, to date we have a number of activities. There's an MOU between ESCOM and Alexco, ESCOM and Transnet on the road to rail migration. So there are collaborations between state-owned companies. We are not up to where we want here, but we intend to improve the model. The impact of the Africa strategy, which countries are we targeting in the timeline? I think there are already such as spin-offs, Chair. SAA is looking at the West Africa hub. And I think why it's important that despite the economic downturn that SOCs invest, because we also wanted to look for opportunities in Africa. And for us to do that, because then you also alleviate the risk of relying on internal as in local or domestic business, but also you forge a relationship within various regions within the continent. So we're beginning to see SACOR already has a business in Mozambique. ESCOM is looking at partnering in Mozambique on energy issues, and SAA is looking at a hub in the West Africa region. So we are beginning to see the value of this strategy. So I think we have answered all the questions, but if there's any that we've missed, I think we will have to communicate. Thank you.
Thank you, I said I don't know second round. Yeah, it's not the second round, it's a follow-up. Yeah. Your question was answered. No, her question. Yes, it was answered. You can read it, DJ, otherwise it was answered. She was not listening. She was looking in your eyes when you were disturbing it. Thank you.
Yes, and I think it's the one relating to the healing of the annual court. Yes, it's because I said that when Minister joined, she was beginning the AGF cycle, and we wanted to look at the impact of the LTTS to date, because there were a lot of assumptions as DDG Transport indicated in the LTTS. So Minister has asked us to do more work, because we submitted a request to National Treasury. So to preempt or not to wait for National Treasury on whether they're going to be a VKM or there's going to be a guarantee, Minister requests us to do whether that looks at the different scenarios. That's where we add. And so we thought that we cannot table the annual reports, because the challenges of the airlines are similar. They both submitted the different strategies, the long-term turnaround strategy for SAA, the 2015-2024 SAA. So we're trying to get some kind of an alignment, and then so that we can be able to come up with a proposal how we deal with the aviation assets.
Thank you. Honorable thing, I'm giving you because you came in late, otherwise I am not supposed to do it.
Thank you for your indulgence, Chairperson. And I apologize for having arrived late. It was another meeting. Some of these questions may have been asked and answered, and if they have, then that's fine. I'll get an answer. The general indemnity claim, 57.3 million rand. So how many more years is it still going to be in operation? And does Danella have money within its own balance sheet to take over this claim instead of the transfer from the department? Secondly, Chairperson, the question of the increase in electricity of 12-point-something%, that's cabinet-proof. Now, I'm sure the minister and the ministry also put a memorandum for cabinet that this should be approved. To what extent have they taken into consideration the cable theft and losses, municipalities not paying, and are there still preferential rates that are charged of some big companies like BHP, Billiton, at the expense of poor householders who have to pay more now? And my last question, Chair, is on the performance bonuses. I mean, we have the CEO saying that our performance bonuses are a drop in the ocean, and I can accept that. But yet, these SOCs are owned by government. Why are we allowing them to compete with us? Why should there be this competitive environment when we're losing skills in the department to our own SOCs? Thank you. And lastly, maybe SAA. Has the Department of Public Enterprises investigated the unceremonious withdrawal of flights from Durban to Cape Town a few years ago? And they said they are going to put those flights on an African airline. Is that, are they making money on that African leg that they've introduced? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable King. Honourable King, you
thank you, Chair. I'll talk to the issue of the performance bonus is more so a principle. And then I'll allow the DDG manufacturer to talk to the general indemnity claim with regards to, even though it's also, the legacy issue there. And the increase in electricity pricing, DDG can do it. Then this question was asked because I was feeling like he's left alone.
Honourable Chief, the indemnity claim is a result of the transaction a few years back where staff got into the Nile aerostructures. And during that transaction, when they did the due diligence, they found that the contract that Airbus had with the Nile aerostructures was suboptimal. And as a prerequisite for the condition of that transaction, the department had to put up this indemnity claim. That particular, if you look at over the years at the claims that NAL has put in for losses that have been incurred on that particular contract, you'll see that they have been going down due to the improved terms that have been extracted out of Airbus. Not also, of course, the improvement in the performance of the Nile aerostructures itself. So we are hoping that over time we'll see further reduction in the claims that are being put in. And as you may recall, that particular the Airbus contract was into the A400M purchased by the country, and we saw it had to develop the aerostructure capability in the country to enable our participation in offset packages. Red packages on that particular program. I can say that there is a lot of benefits that have come from the investment that the government has made in the Nile structures, including obviously in ensuring that the Nile is not compromised by its participation. I hope that answers.
I was starting to think that the mic is coming against me. In relation to the Eskom tariff increases,
it's something that we monitor, something that we monitor quarterly in terms of the financial capability of the company. And we are concerned that the revenues that the company is generating are not sufficient to cover the costs going forward. So the issue of long-term sustainability becomes pronounced. So according to that, there was a task force that was established, led by the departments, including the National Treasury, the Department of Energy, and we are consulting with ESOM and the regulator, particularly because the tariffs are related. And various options we look at in terms of supporting the company in light of the problem that is in, including the Kickstarter switcher program with the new power station and so on, which was subsequently taken to cabinet. What cabinet approved, they didn't approve tariff increases, particularly because that process is regulated. You have an independent regulator that does that and goes through the process, which is a transparent and open process. So the increase that we see now that has been approved for next year is part of that regulatory process where the regulator is going to actually look at costs, to look at corporate impact in the provision of electricity, and the regulator felt that has come to recover, so they allow us to recover more for the next initial year. So while there has been support for ESCOM going back to apply to the regulator, it's still left to the regulator to go back and assess in line the regulatory framework that they have, whether there is a case for increases or not. And maybe just there's also mechanisms that have been looked at to support vulnerable customers, the poor, but also industries that may have to be looked at. And we are consulting DCI and the Economic Development Department in relation to that.
Thanks, Chief. With regards to the route that was from the central government from between the data, I think we need to look at the provision of air services from the context of the services that they are provided by the three states of the AI. So the services were withdrawn by the one AI, FAA, but you do have access provided by Mango on the route. With regard to the promise that we made that aircraft would be redirected to a destination in Africa, I don't have the exact detail of the exact destination, but what I can confirm is that all of the services into Africa are within the making for both FAA and the state. And then,
thank you, Chair. Then on the performance bonuses, I think maybe first, Chair, to talk to just a principle that the fact that state-owned companies are regulated differently and they operate with a different legal framework vis-a-vis government, that by itself would tell you that they may pay in accordance with the public service act. They remunerate them on the basis of the conditions of the Service Labor Relations Act and all of that. But what we have done as a department, again, because we have been looking at owner payment, spending patterns within the different companies. The introduction of the remuneration standards was introduced precisely to try and bridge that gap so that the state-owned companies are not moving too far away from government as the shareholder, notwithstanding the fact that we are regulated differently. And we've tried to on the whole issue of why are they being allowed to compete with the department in terms of stuff. In the past, we've tried to introduce your cooling off period, the restraint of trade, but then we were challenged on the legal side. For example, the restraint of trade, the law is here. You're not going to restrain somebody forever because now you're denying the ability to use the skill for which they're trained. And part of also is working when they feel that the time has come, they want to eat. And the cooling of pure, you would have it, but you find that sometimes it becomes a challenge or in terms of implementation. They also imagine that people they can agree to not join an SOC for a particular period of months or years. But you find that you, the moonlighting principle, so the whole issue of enforceability and monitoring also it is a challenge.
That's it, merci.
Thank you very much. I think
I didn't say
and quality and questions. So
yeah,
I hope you got your answers, because we're not going to allow the second round.
Not really. I'm still on the first one. You didn't answer how much is the claim? The claim is that you're getting out. How much is the overall?
I don't have a figure with honorable team, but you can provide that to you.
It will be provided to the committee, not specifically to you. It will be provided to the committee. Honorable members and the Department of Public Enterprise, let me take the opportunity in thanking everybody for attending the meeting, and also thanking the for the revelation, and hopefully we are going to take things step by step as this committee, and also with the department, we will always be working together throughout this term, keeping in mind that the then Minister of Finance has cautioned us in wasteful and fruitless expenditure. And all of us, he told us also, with our salaries, also we must not have wasteful expenditure. We must always keep in credit with everything. So I thank everybody. I think the meeting stands adjourned now. Can I see the 3 a.m. members, please?